Some Yom Ha'atzmut remarks. Number one, the halachas of the day that David was asking about. So there are basically, in my estimation, and I could be totally wrong about this, in my estimation, there are basically two approaches to the celebration of Yom Ha'atzmut. Obviously, some say that there's no such thing as a celebration at all. There are certain segments of the Jewish population that don't celebrate the day at all. And they're not just because they're Neturei Karta. It's because the day in and of itself was the... Well, you tell me, what's the history of the day? What's the significance of it's pushed off, which is also an issue. Hey, ER is tomorrow. But what's the significance of Hey, ER? Yeah, why is it Yom Ha'atzmut? What makes it Yom Ha'atzmut? What happened on that day of any significance that it should be considered? So we don't know. Okay, so someone Google Yom Ha'atzmut. So Wikipedia, come on. So someone riff. Okay, so what does it say? What does it commemorate, and why should it be on this day? I mean, it commemorates independence. That's yeah, question.
Independence.
Okay, but why should it be on this day, of any day?
Because Israel declared independence on 14 May 1948, which corresponded with Hebrew day 5 Iyar. In that year, Yom Ha'atzmut was originally celebrated on that day, however, to break Shabbat desecration, and maybe commemorated on the days before or after the 5th Iyar.
Okay, so talk to me. So what happened on that? What do we need in the Declaration of Independence? What does that mean? Something was signed? Something was done? Some guy in his office said something? What does it mean? What did they sign? What's it called? It doesn't say. That's all it says. There's no details. There's a link to... There's no link to, like, something starts with a B? And an A? And an L? There's no... Yeah, okay. Is that a link? It says something? I've lost my faith in Wikipedia. What? Well, let's see. Let's look at...
What was the question?
The Yom Ha'atzmaut is supposed to be on Hey ER. As Abe pointed out, it gets pushed off whenever it's before or after, too close before or after Shabbos, because the religious elements in the government are concerned that there will be Chil Shabbos either because of it, as a result, whatever. So it's frequently pushed off, which is, of course, Tiro Rosh Hashanah doesn't like that, as we'll discuss for his Shita about Yom Ha'atzmaut, because he holds it to Hey ER. But we'll have to discuss that. But the question is, why Hey ER? What is the significance of Hey ER? Because whenever you talk about a commemoration, for example, so we try to make a Sudas Hoda every year, because my wife nearly died when we had our last child. So it's a Sudas Hoda. It's a day where when we had our David Akiva, our last child. So she had all of her blood replaced. Like, all of it. So it's a day where we make a Sudas Hadas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the day is a very significant day, you know. She gets, like, depressed and, you know, needs a lot of chizuk. No, so that's a question that we'll have to discuss a little bit. Like, how does Halal fit into all this? But the point is that there are days that have significance. So if Hey ER is of significance, so it's Hey ER. You know, pushing it off is a little strange, but okay. Yom Ha'atzmaut.
So, what is that?
Let's see, what does it say here? It really doesn't say it. I'm so disappointed. Yeah, it says Israeli Declaration of Independence. It's a link. Okay. The Israeli Declaration of Independence, formerly the Declaration establishing the State of Israel, was proclaimed on the 14th of May, 1948, which was Hey ER, by David Ben Gurion, the executive head of the WZO, chairman of the Jewish Agency for Palestine, and soon to be the first prime minister of Israel. It declared the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael to be known as the State of Israel, which would come into effect on termination of the British mandate at midnight that day. Ah, now we're getting somewhere. The British had a mandate. They, so to speak, owned the land of Israel. Yeah. And that was set to expire at midnight, which would then allow whatever the governing power is in the land to then declare independence and say, this is a new state. Yeah. So this is all based on the end of the British mandate. Let's see what it say here. Through this letter, which became known as the Balfour Declaration, British government policy officially endorsed Zionism. After World War I, the UK was given a mandate for Palestine, which it had conquered from the Ottomans during the war. Right, that was World War I. In 1937, the Peel Commission suggested partitioning mandate Palestine into an Arab state and a Jewish state, although it was rejected. Anyway, that's the bottom line. This is what's referred to as the Balfour Declaration. It was simply, I mean, not so simple, but it was simply a declaration that this is the new government. We are the new government. We are independent of Palestine and, you know, the British, anybody else. And we are our own state. We are the state of Israel. Yes, it was the declaration of the existence of the state of Israel. Right. So now that became known as, you know, what was the result, by the way? War. that was tantamount to a declaration of war against all the Arabs that lived there or were nearby or were upset about it. Yeah. So it's an interesting thing. The days that we celebrate in Yiddishkeit are generally days of victory. Purim was not the day we started fighting, right? It was the day that we won. Hanukkah, not the day that we started fighting, it's the day that we won. So it is, in a certain way, this is a little bit of the opposite of a lot of the other days that we celebrate. It's interesting, right? I don't want to be mean. I'm not trying to be mean, okay? If you get mad at me, it's okay. Lots of people seem to be mad at me right now. It's fine. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just going to say it how it is. So it does seem rather secularized, because in the secular world, we celebrate days of independence. We celebrate fighting. We celebrate the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. You know what I'm saying? We spoke about this when it came to the Yom HaShoah. So this does seem to be fall into that pattern. Oh, we declared our independence. Yeah, and then you fought a war. So why don't you celebrate the day you won the war, the day that, you know, you finally beat everybody else or something? Why shouldn't that be the day we celebrate? No, that's what the Torah days are always about. That's how we celebrate when we're victorious. Kadosh Baruch Hu helped us to win. No, we declared independence. It irks me a little bit, you know, but you hear what's going on. So is that a day that commemorates something? Yeah, it commemorates the Declaration of Independence. Is that a day for Hallel? Is it a holiday? That's the next question. So those that choose to disregard it in the Jewish world, so they'll right away say what I just said. And they'll say, this is just a declaration of Koichi V'yotim Yadi. This is not a reflection of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in Kiyuzah. Because if you wanted to reflect that, you should celebrate the day that a Kadosh Baruch Hu helped you to win or something like that. So
you're saying we would celebrate Muslims on the day, or like a different day, on the day that Kadosh Baruch Hu let us help others?
Yeah, so there's no such day.
Can we make a day like that? And if we did,
we could. You know, I don't know. You'd have to figure out what to mark and which day. And, you know, was there a day that finished that particular war in 1948 and allowed us to, you know, rest from our enemies like on Purim?
Would that be considered a holiday if we do?
I don't know. Maybe it could. You know, maybe it could. That's Rosh Hashanah's approach that we'll talk about. But
so was it 5:50 PR?
Yeah. You want to look it up? Well, May 14th, 1948. What day of the week was it? May 14th, 1948. Okay, so let's do it. Let's dig in. So that's the starting point of this machlokes. What's the significance of the calendar day? Does the calendar day have a significance? And what significance does it reflect? Okay, so step one is a lot of people that just don't celebrate Yom HaTzimut. They consider it to be a secular holiday. It has nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. And, you know, that's the end of the story. Those that don't take that approach are going to take, I think, one of two approaches. There's the behavioral approach, and then there's the holiday approach. The behavioral approach, which in a certain sense perhaps even allow you to manipulate the date. The behavioral approach is we say Hallel. Yeah, we say Hallel. It's an observance, it's a religious observance of recognition of the day. What that means is that there's no significance to the day in and of itself. It's not like a holiday. What it means is it's an expression of Hakares HaTov, Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for having the state of Israel. Again, it all revolves around the state of Israel, which is why some people that are not Zionists don't relate to it, because it's not Eretz Israel, it's Medinat Israel. So then there's a significant difference between the two. Yeah.
Don't there need to be requirements in a certain event for us to say halal?
Good. So what makes saying halal questionable is whether or not there is an obligation to say halal, which doesn't seem to be the case, because what would be the obligation? Anytime somebody decides that they're going to declare independence, so that is, you know, Yezrachi of halal, but because there is a war afterwards. Again, but that's part of the same conversation. If there's a day of a Yeshua of Klal Yisrael, Klal Yisrael was saved, so you have the model already by Az Yashir. Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim. They were almost decimated by Mitzrayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu did a nes, that may be very significant. Kadosh Baruch Hu did a nes, saved them, and they sang Shira. And so from here, the Gemara Megillah says that that's a model for how we're supposed to behave, that we sing Shira, we say halal when we are saved. Why don't we say halal on Purim? So the Gemara gets involved in that. We don't say halal on Purim. What's the pshat? It was in Chutz La'aretz. You know, we were still subservient to Achashverosh. The Megillah is the halal. The Gemara has several answers to that question. But that's the mahalach of the Gemara is. Okay, so what's the Yeshua? Faker, it wasn't the Yeshua. It was danger. But the Chiyuv Halal is there because there are those that want to make this into a religious day. And how do you make it into a religious day? You do the behavior, you say halal. Can you make a bracha on such a halal? When do you ever make a bracha on anything? So we started to discuss this, just like all the brachas ha-mitzvah. Halal would be a brachas ha-mitzvah, correct? Because it's not a bracha. The bracha is on the halal. Let me make sure I'm being clear. There's a bracha sometimes is shavach v'hoda. Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're awesome. That's a bracha. That is the bracha. You don't say anything afterwards. That is the bracha. So if you see lightning, you say, you know, semi-se gracious. You're praising a Kadosh Baruch Hu for his awesomeness. And that's it. You don't do anything afterwards. So if you're going to say a bracha and then do something, it's obviously a bracha samitzvah, right? You're making the bracha on what you're about to do. And you say, asher kitshanu b'mitzvah savitzivanu. You don't say asher kitshanu b'mitzvah savitzivanu on a bracha on a rainbow, on a bracha on thunder, on light, right? You don't say asher kitshanu savitzivanu. You say bracha tashem elokeinu melech olam, whatever. So whenever you say asher kitshanu savitzivanu, you're saying that this is bracha samitzvah. So the bracha on halal is a bracha samitzvah. Yeah? Pashut. That's the length of debate on that. So what's the mitzvah? You're chayv to say halal? So are we ever chayv to say halal d'araisa? Probably not. There's a chassam sefer based on the Gemara and Megillah, but maybe there's certain times that we should be chayv to say halal d'araisa because the Gemara says a kal v'chomer from Yitzchias and Shach, whatever. Okay, so maybe there are, but we don't generally pass like we assume. Halal even on Yantif is a derabbanan, but it's a chiyuv derabbanan. So whenever there is a chag, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, there's a chiyuv halal. That's why we say halal shalim. The whole halal. There's a chiyuv to say it. We say all of it, and we make a bracha. How can you make a bracha? Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't command you to do it. The rabbis told you to do it. So the Gemara asks this kasha, and the Gemara says, because we have to listen to the rabbis, and there are other reasons. Oh, it's okay. So that's valid. You can say Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded us, even when it's a mitzvah derabbana. So far, so good. Big machlokes after the times of the Gemara. This is a machlokes already in the times of the Rishonim. Do we make a bracha on a minhag? You hear the question? Can you say Asher Kishanu Mitzvah Sivanu when you're observing a minhag? The rabbis never told you to do it. It's a minhag. So can you make a bracha on a minhag? This is a machlokes. I believe Sfardim do not say a bracha on halal on Rosh Chodesh. Is that true? Where are Sfardim? I believe they do not. And Ashkenazim do. Our minhag is to make a bracha on a minhag. So that's of significance. How do you categorize halal on Yom Ha'atzmaut? It's certainly not a chiyuv d'rabbanan. At best, it would be a minig. And is it even considered to be a minig? Because what makes something a minig? So, you know, if people that identify as a tzioni say it, does that make it into a minig? I don't know. Maybe it should be. So maybe it should be subject to that machlokes. And so maybe if you hold it's a legitimate minig, then you should be making a bracha, perhaps. Yeah? Okay, so that's a little bit of that issue. The other approach is that it's not a question of a behavioral halal. It's a question of, can you identify the day as a chag? How would you identify the day as a chag? So Rav Shachar's basic approach is that, if I'm getting this right, that have you ever heard of Megillas Tainus? Did you ever learn Gemara Tainus? Yeah? So the Gemara Tainus mentions, and it's mentioned in other places in Shas, that there used to be a scroll, there used to be a book that had a list of happy days. Yeah? Had a list of happy days. On those days, you're not allowed to fast. Maybe you're not allowed to have a eulogy or fast, depending on what the celebratory level of the day was. No eulogies, no fasting, all these kinds of things. But the Megillas Tainis, those were, we don't do it anymore. We don't observe these days anymore. That's what the Gemara says. But we used to have these days in Megillas Tainis. What were those days all about? Those days were celebratory days. They were days, things happened. A nace that happened in the Beis HaMikdash, the establishment of certain things in the Beis HaMikdash. It all revolved around Beis HaMikdash. So the Rosh Hashanah likes to point out that there is a nesivus on Megillas Esther. What makes Purim a holiday? It's not the Raisa, it's the Rabbanim. What allows you to do that? So the Nesivus has this line that it set up the binyan of the second Beis HaMikdash. It set up the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah? It took time, but it set it up. Esther's son, Daryavesh, actually was the one that ultimately allowed its construction. So it set up, so perhaps we can define even Purim as a celebratory day because of what it led to. So isn't it true that the day of the Declaration of Independence of Israel is a step in the direction of Binyan Beis HaMikdash? We hope. We haven't seen it yet, but we certainly hope it's heading in that direction.
Well, they probably started celebrating after Purim before the Israel, too, right?
It sounds like it. They already made a Megillah way before.
Right, like before the Beis
HaMikdash.
So.
Yeah. Morning. Okay, so be that as it may. That's the Chag approach. So according to what Rosh Hashanah is saying, the day is a celebratory day. The day, not today, tomorrow. Tomorrow is the day that's considered to be a celebration. Can you just manipulate the day and say, well, we'd like it to be a Thursday this year instead of a Friday? It doesn't usually work like that. The only time it works like that is when you have a Tainus. You can't have a Shabbos. So, you know, you can't have a Tainus and Shabbos. So you switch it. You know what I mean? But you can't just go ahead and say, I'd rather have Pesach on like a different day. I'd Purim, we'll move it. Purim, you're going to point out to me, has different days for the reading of the Megillah. Anyone ever learn a first submission of Megillah? So you know, Megillah Nigra is good, Aleph, Yibayez, Yigil, Meidah, Tesbah. Yeah? So, but that's not the holiday. So that's not a kash on me. That means that the Megillah can be read earlier than the holiday. The proof is that the Su'udah and the celebration of the holiday is always on the proper day, even if you're allowed to read Megillah early. Hear what I just said? It's a small ha'ara, but an important one. Okay. Anyway, so those are the two mahalachim. There's the behavioral mahalach, halal, and you deal with the rules of halal. And then there's the holiday idea, which has nothing to do with behaviors necessarily. It has to do with the celebratory nature of the day. You'd also have to get into the issue of halal. Now, what is the cell? But both of these issues, what do they have to do with? Do they have to do with some sort of leading to the binyan beis hamikdash that allows it to be a celebratory day? Does it have to mark a nace? Does there have to be a nace on the day in order to be able to do it? So everybody points out a Rashi on Chanukah. There's not a lot of Gemara in Chanukah, you probably know. Yeah, in the, what perek in Shabbos, do you remember? It's easy to remember because it's the perek that we say in shul on Friday, unless you're davening yourself svar. In Ashkenazi shuls, we say, Bamei Madlikin. That is the name of the perek, Perek Bamei Madlikin. Perek Bamei Madlikin is second perek in Shabbos. In Perek, Bamadlikin, you deal with oils and wicks that you're allowed to use on Shabbos and not allowed to use on Shabbos because we're afraid you're going to patchkey with it. It's going to get, it's going to be shvach and you're going to cause it to ignite more. Yeah? So that's how the Gemara gets into, what about Hanukkah? What about Hanukkah on Shabbos? So that's how the Gemara gets involved in Hanukkah over there in the Gemara and Shabbos from those Mishnahs. So now you'll always know. Yeah, you always know now where to find the halachas of Hanukkah in the Gemara and Shabbos. Second Perek, Bamadlikin. So, the Gemara says, my Chanukah. What's Chanukah? What's Chanukah? And the Gemara says the whole story, you know, with the Pach Shemen. So Rashi writes, the question of the Gemara, my Chanukah, Rashi writes, Al Eza Nes Kavua. On what miracle did they affix it? Did they attach it to? It's a funny question. Who says that has to be any miracle? Why is that to be? Maybe it was the war. You know what I'm saying? So people want to be medayik in this Rashi that there's no such thing as establishing a holiday unless you can pinpoint HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement. Now, maybe I'm going out on a limb here, but I feel that this is a little bit of a bigger picture, which we did discuss a bit, which is the concept of Pirsumi Nisa. I tried to push this on you a few times this year, that Pirsume Nisa has a very unique place in halacha, that you're supposed to spend like all your money on it. Yeah, it's like an unbelievable thing. And we spoke about Eliezer Eved Avram and the fact that Torah repeats everything he said because he was mefarsim the nase. It was Pirsume Nisa. So
this goes back to our Lula and Esrog.
We discussed it with Lulav and Esrog.
Is that like technically Pirsume Nisa, where you spend your money on a really nice Esrog?
That would be Hidur Mitzvah, right? That's a different idea. That's Hidur Mitzvah. Wow. But Pirsume Nisa was, you have to have arba kosos, you have the 4 cups of wine, no matter how much it costs you on Pesach. You have to have Miguel Sester, you have to do all the mitzvahs of Purim. Hanukkah, you have to make sure you get to sell stuff so you can have wicks and oil. You know, way more than tefillin d'oraisa. You have to sell stuff to have it. Anyway, without getting back into that topic, it's the same issue here. The chagim d'rabbanan are what do they share in common? What's inside of Shavuot? Like, what are they about? And the answer is Pirsume Nisa. They're about Pirsume Nisa. What is Pirsume Nisa? So the way I explained it was that these holidays are showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in the world. Yeah? That's what makes it so special, is that that's what life is really about, is to try to show how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is impacting, influencing this world, and everything is supposed to go in that direction. There's nothing more important than Pirsume Nisa. Yeah, that's what Chazal are telling us. You have to spend more money on Pirsume Nisa than a mitzvah d'oraisa. I don't know if you appreciate the shock value of what I'm saying right now. It's clear from Chazal, right? The point is very simple. The halacha is you have to sell your clothes to make sure you have wicks and oil for Hanukkah. There's no such halacha to fulfill a mitzvah asay d'oraisa. Not true. You have to spend money, maybe 20% of what you have available, but not more than that. If it's going to cost you that much money, then you're putter. You don't have to do the mitzvah. Crazy, right? But Ner Hanukkah, which is derabbanan, the halacha is you have to sell your shirt. It doesn't make any sense, right? That's the kasha. The answer is, Chazal are trying to tell us the importance of Pirsume Nisa. What's Pirsume Nisa? To show HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in this world. Where do you see such a concept in the Torah itself? Eliezer Eved Avram. That the Torah repeats his telling over the story. The Torah doesn't waste letters. And it tells over the whole story. So remember, we read this to Rashi. What does Rashi say? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, more precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the stories of Avdei Avos. Mitorasan Shalbanim. It's more important to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than the Torah of the Banim. Because many halachas are learned out, many mitzvahs are learned from a little extra vav. And the story of Eliezer Avram is repeated in its entirety. What does that teach you? What's the point of that? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know that that's the most important thing there is to show how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in this world. That's the most important thing there is that will lead to all of our other mitzvahs. It will lead to our avodas Hashem. It will change our lives. It's the most important thing there is. And that's why Pirsume Nisa is the most important thing there is. I don't think people understand this or appreciate this. But that's the din. That's what it is. Is there Pirsume Nisa of Yom HaAtzmaut? If there's Pirsume Nisa, okay, so then we enter into the parasha of Halal, of Chag, of all these kinds of things. And that's probably what Rashi means when he says, well, is a nes kavua. What nes did they affix Chanukah to? Because it has to be a nes, because it's all about Pirsume Nisa. That's what it's all about. So if there's no Pirsume Nisa, then what does it mean it's a halal? What does it mean it's a holiday? So Yom Yerushalayim, it has more teeth than Yom HaAtzmaut because of that. Because Yom Yerushalayim was a victory, was a war, we won the war miraculously. Al derech hateva, but miraculously. Yom HaAtzmaut, okay, you know. We declared our independence. So that's why the day is difficult for a lot of people. Be that as it may, it is a day that is celebrated in Eretz Yisrael, and many other people all over the world are recognizing the day as a day that recognizes Eretz Yisrael, really Medinat Yisrael. But those of us that want to tap into it a little bit and say, listen, I'm not necessarily going to say Hallel, I'm not necessarily going to observe it in any other celebratory day way, but since it is a day that is recognized all over the world, how could we not do something to recognize it? So then people try to figure out religiously how to bring it in. So you have to expand it beyond Medinat Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. And you have to use it all, utilize it, therefore, as a day of appreciation of having Eretz Yisrael, access to Eretz Yisrael, all the advantages of Eretz Yisrael. So that's what I'd like to do with you for a few minutes. I want to make a couple of points. One, I want to go through some Rambams with you because I think it's fascinating that he stuck this in. But before we do that, I want to just make a general statement. I'm including myself. We have a problem. Yeah? What's our problem? That we're always on our phones? But that's not what I wanted to talk about. But that is a problem. It's a very serious problem. What I want to talk about is, and I believe, and you can get mad at me. You can get mad at me. It's okay.
What if I don't
want I'm on a roll. I believe that your particular generation has this as a bigger challenge than even mine for two reasons. The issue, the challenge, is appreciating. Let's use this as an example. It's not the whole picture. It's an example. The example is appreciating, let's say, Yom HaAtzmaut. Appreciating having the land of Israel. Why? So what you and I both share in common is that when we were born, we had it. You know what I'm saying? When you're born into a world that has Eretz Yisrael, it's very hard for us to appreciate how special and important it is because we were born into that world. If you were born into the world where you didn't have it and you lived through getting it, it would be different. And if you listen to Rabbi Beryl Wein, you know, I think he tells a story like he was in Miami at the time and like everyone in 1948, when they heard about the Declaration of Independence, everyone got very excited and then terrified. Because everybody thought that the Arabs were just going to kill everyone. What were they going to fight with? What were the Jews going to do? It's like Hanukkah all over again. So the sense of elation when it came out that the Jews were not decimated. I mean, that was, you were saying it was Friday. You know, so if you're not checking the news on Shabbos, you don't know if there's still people in the land of Israel on Sunday, Motzei Shabbos. You don't know if they're still alive. So it was a time where when you saw what it could have cost, and then all of a sudden we have it, and it's really ours, and we can have our own country, like for real? Really? And yesterday we did it. The British had it, and we were allowed to live there. So we don't appreciate that. And it's something you have to read history about and try to imagine. That's like just Mitzrayim. It's like the Seder night, you know? Like trying to remember what it was to be like in Mitzrayim and leaving Mitzrayim, you know? We have to do that. In general, I think this has gotten much, much worse over time because there's become a big push. That's what I mean by your particular generation. As you know, the whole concept of cancel culture, the whole concept of what's going on Bizman Hazeh is very much focused on me and now. And what came before me doesn't really make a difference. We look to the future. We don't look towards the past. The past is bad. Bad, 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 bad. And that sense is getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. You know what I'm saying, right? You with me? You agree? So the future is where the light is and the past is all darkness. So we don't even think about it. So that's a problem. But so that's what we need to do. For example, the reason I keep making such a big deal about like the Suras Hoda today is because between you and me and, you know, everyone else in the world that's listening, no one else is listening, we know that we're not going to go because, like, if I have time, I'll go. You know, it's free lunch. Maybe I'll go. But, like, I don't connect to it. I don't connect to it. So that's a problem because we need to connect to it. Because how do we not? Unless you're a member of Nature Karta or something, or you're Satmar, and you think that Eretz Yisrael is, like, really bad and it's, like, preventing Mashiach from coming. So, okay, I get that. You know. Yeah, you know, if you're fast, I know. So, but barring that, you know, to say there's like a lot happening in yeshiva, but like I have other things to do because I want to study. So it means that we're not connecting to it. So, you know, should we be connecting to it? Should we not be connecting to it? So that you have to ask yourself, is this something I should be connecting to or not connecting to? If you've decided consciously that this is something you should not be connecting to, okay, you know, that's your choice. But if it's something that in your mind you say, I really should be connecting to it, but I don't, okay, so then that, you know, then we got to go through therapy. You know what I'm saying? We got to have a little therapy. So the therapy is to understand what it means. What could it have meant? What did it mean that we didn't have it? We take for granted if what would happen? What would happen, Chevra, if all of a sudden there was such incredible anti-Semitism in the United States of America that Jews were being attacked on every street corner? What would we do? And we weren't being supported by the government. What would we do? We would go to Israel. Right? We would go to Israel. Yeah? Now think about the times of the Holocaust. That's what happened. Why didn't they go to Israel? There was no Israel. There was nowhere to go. It's terrifying. We don't live in a world like that, so we don't think about it. But that's the way it is in the times of Purim. Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? There's nowhere to go. Like, let's say that Herzl, whoever, was successful with Uganda or whatever, yeah? Is that what you're asking? I don't know. Maybe, it would be probably a secular type of holiday because, I don't know. It goes back to a lot of the things we were discussing. Was there a Nace? Was there a Pirsum Inisa? That's what we have to remember. What we have to remember as religious Jews is that celebrations are always revolving around our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch. There's really nothing else to celebrate. So if this is an expression of our relationship, it's a Pirsum Inisa. So then that's worthy, more than worthy. It's a chiv, to celebrate. I don't know. Would it be that way in Uganda? Would it be in Uganda? I don't know. Okay, so that's A. That's A. B. You ready for this? You want to look at this inside. If you want to follow inside, so go to whatever your favorite app is. You know, Chabad has an English version of the Rambam. You can go to Safaria, Merkava, I don't know. Whatever. There are multiple sources. If you'd like to follow along, if you just want to listen, but don't be on your phone. The reason I am learning this with you is because today's Yom HaAtzmaut. That's A. B, that it's fascinating that the Rambam, which of course the Mishnah Torah is a work of halacha, he integrated you'll see what he did in a minute. Let's just learn it and you'll see what's going on over here. Have you ever learned what the Rambam says about Eretz Yisrael? No, nobody learns this. So I want to share it with you. I think it's fascinating. Just A, what he says. B, that he included it in his Mishnah Torah. And it could be. And C, what's he trying to do? Like, what's his point? Yeah, so those are the three things, you know. Okay, so let's dig in. So if you want to follow inside, I'm in the Rambam Hilchos Melachim Umechamosayim. So it's at the very end of the Rambam. This is the Rambam's last section. The end of Hilchos Melachim in the Rambam is Hilchos Mashiach. The laws of who's going to be Mashiach, right? Like, for example, when he says like a person's dead, he's not going to be Mashiach. Things like that. Okay, I said it. You don't have to do that. But whatever. That's all here in the Rambam. All halach. The Rambam is the only one that does this. The Rambam has the halachas of Mashiach. Yeah? Halachas of everything. That's what the Rambam did. Halachas of everything. In Perek, hey, the Rambam, let's get a little bit of the context here. The little bit of the context is that the Rambam Hilchos Melachim is definitely talking about the future. He's talking about there were three mitzvahs that Klal Yisrael were commanded when they got to Eretz Yisrael. You got to have a melech. You got to get rid of Amalek. You have to build the Beis HaMikdash. Three things. You need a melech, you can't have a Amalek, and you have to build a Beis HaMikdash. So that's what the Rambam discusses here. He gets involved with melech. Who's a melech? Who should be the melech? What are the halachas of a melech? Number two, you got to get rid of Amalek, and he deals with the destruction of Amalek. And then the last topic is binyan Beis HaMikdash. So in between getting rid of Amalek and building Beis HaMikdash, he gets involved with Eretz Yisrael. So that's what we're going to talk about. All the lands. I mean, Perek, hey, halacha vav. All the lands that are conquered by Klal Yisrael by a king with the permission of the Sanhedrin. Harei zeh kibush rabim, that's considered to be a public conquest, and it has a halacha like Eretz Yisrael, just like Yehoshua when he conquered land in every which way. There is a big difference between when Yehoshua conquered the land of Israel and when Bnei Yisrael came back to Eretz Yisrael after Purim. Because Yehoshua had to fight a war and conquer. But when Bnei Yisrael came back after Purim, they just settled the land and lived in the land. They didn't need to fight and kick anybody out. So there is a difference between the two Kiddushos. That's how Chazal look at it. It was called Kiddusha Rishona and Kiddusha Shnia. The first Kiddusha was through war. The second Kedusha was Chazaka, like we're learning in Baba Basra. Yeah. The second was we lived there. Fine. Next. It's permissible to live anywhere in the world that you want. Yeah, that's the Rambam's introduction here. You're allowed to live wherever you want, except one place.
Egypt.
Where did Rambam live?
Egypt.
Very good. He talks about it. Wherever is considered Mitzrayim, you're not allowed to live there. In three places, the Torah says you're not allowed to return to Egypt. And he quotes the Psukim, fine. And Alexandria is included. Now, he says, however, it's permissible to return to the land of Egypt for business. Yeah, if you say Sims guys, you should know. Yeah, you're allowed to go for business to Egypt. And if you need to utilize it to go to other places because you're passing through to conquer territory or whatever the case may be, that's also allowed. The Isser is only lehishtakeyasha, which is a lashon from the Haggadah, if you remember. The only Isser is to live there because you want to move in and live there. But if it's temporary, you're just staying for a little while for whatever practical reason, it's not a problem. Is that justification for the Rambam? Maybe. Whatever it is. But if a person violates it, it's not a law that gets lashes because when he came in, he was allowed, because who says how long he's going to stay? He didn't violate the Isser until at some point he stayed too long. Now, so, but that's a lav shem b'maisa. He didn't do an action, so he doesn't get malchus for that. Okay. The Rambam says, I think, can't prove this, I think if the Jewish people would conquer the land of Israel, then, sorry, if the Jewish people would conquer Egypt, I think you'd be allowed to live there. I'm not sure, but I think so.
I don't
know, maybe, probably. I was in Egypt. Anybody else here? I was in Egypt. Anybody else here been in Egypt? Has anyone else been there? No? I was there. I was there. I went on a trip. I was there. Oh, I was, maybe that counts. I saw the pyramids. I saw the Sphinx. Yeah, I was there. I had pictures. I was there.
Did you do the picture where like you're holding the Sphinx's face?
No, we did it by the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Okay, individuals are not allowed to go back to Egypt or to live there or whatever. Fine. Now, listen to this. So far, the Rambam has said, you're allowed to live wherever you want, just not Egypt. Ready? Test. You're not allowed to leave the land of Israel to go outside of the land of Israel ever. Okay, the Rambam started. You're allowed to live wherever you want, just not in Egypt, right? So far, so good? Now the Rambam says, if you're in the land of Israel, you're never allowed to leave.
Wait, if you live in the land of Israel?
You're not allowed to leave the land of Israel ever.
But isn't it when you like live in Israel or live in a certain place and you move from there, it changes like your sort of mazal type thing?
Maybe, but the Rambam is just speaking straight up halacha. The Rambam says in halacha, if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to leave. And he'll say his exceptions in a minute. But so how can the Rambam say you're allowed to live wherever you want? So you are allowed to live wherever you want. If you're in Israel, you're not allowed to leave. Right? But there's no iser to live anywhere in the world. Okay. Ella, what are you allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for? Number one, to learn Torah. If the yeshivas are all in Babel, if the yeshivas are in New York, and those are the best yeshivas, after you're going to become the biggest Talmud Chacham, you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for that reason. Okay. Elisa Isha, or to get married. If for whatever reason, you know, you have to leave Eretz Yisrael to get married, you're allowed to do that.
No.
Just to get the girl and, you know, to get married. Or if there's a, you know, who knows? Maybe there's Jews that are in danger, that are terrorists attacking, you know, whatever the case may be. You need to do Hatzalah. So Hatzalah is certainly allowed to leave. And then he writes, V'yachzer la'aretz, but you have to come back. In all of these cases, there's no such thing. Limud Torah, Elisa Isha, Hatzil, Hatzalah, all of them, the Rambam adds, and when it's done, you have to come back. I thought you're allowed to live whatever you want. Okay. Anyway. Business, this is the same thing. You're allowed to do business. You're allowed to leave for business. You know, you're coming back. But lishkon mechutz la'aretz, aser. But to live in chutz la'aretz is aser. What? I thought the Rambam said it's mutter.
Yeah.
So we have a contradiction in the Rambam. We have to deal with. El Im Kain, the only reason wouldn't be us there is if Chazak Shama Rav, maybe there's a crazy famine in the land of Israel, and he says, you know, how much that would have to be, what would be considered a crazy famine, he defines it. Okay, fine, we can skip all the details. Let's say, even though in those situations you'd be allowed to leave the land of Israel, but Midas Chasidus, if you're a chassid and trying to do the right thing, you shouldn't leave. What's my proof? Shahari Machlon with Kilion. Who are Machlon and Kilion? Who are Machlon and Kilion? Sound familiar? Who are they? They're people that I'll give you a hint. They died. They died because they left Israel. No, not there yet. They married two famous people. One was super famous. She converted. It's right. Sarus and Orpa. Yeah. Mach and Kilion were Naomi's daughters, sons, and they married Mach. They married Rus and Orpa, and according to the Rambam, they died because they left Eretz Yisrael. But there was a famine. Yeah, but they were on the level that they shouldn't have done it. They were on the level of Chassidim. They were big tzaddikim, and their father was a big tzaddik, and they shouldn't have done it. That's what Rambam writes. Shnei Gedolei Hador Hayu. Wow, Gedolei Hador. They left because of a crazy famine. But nonetheless, they were a chayv misa in Hashem's eyes. And by the way, Shavuos is coming up, so this is Nyan Yuma. The Rambam does seem to be saying they did not die because they married chiksas. Right? Big issue. Big issue in understanding Megillas Rus. Were Rus and Arpa, did they convert? Did they not convert? Did they die because they married chiksas and chutzars? According to Rambam, they died because they abandoned Eretz Yisrael. You don't find that interesting? That's interesting, right? Gedolei HaChachamim. Okay, so far so good. So far the Rambam has been dealing with a halacha. The halacha is, apparently, in certain situations, it's mutter to live in outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam seems to say, in general, you're not allowed to live outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's usher to leave Eretz Yisrael. A little confusing, but there are certain situations one's allowed to leave. The Rambam seems to be saying, but you got to come back. You're really not allowed to stay there. Now he says something that's just like seemingly emotional. The greatest of the Chachamim used to kiss the borders of the land of Israel. They would kiss its stones and roll in its dirt. Anybody here ever kissed the tarmac and got to Israel? They still do that? That was nice. Oh. Yeah, you don't want to kiss the gate. But I remember when I came on I think it was a USY trip. It was a Poland-Israel trip. And I remember when we got there, so we kissed the tarmac, you know, we kissed the land of Israel. Yeah, I did that too. Yeah. That was big for me. That was what, to me, it made history real. When I came to the Kaisel the first time, for me, it made history real. It wasn't just a book. It was really a... Anyway... The Chachamim also said, whoever lives in Eretz Yisrael sins? Forgiven. Sins forgiven.
This is what
so if you look in Kesef Mishnah and the Ritva, you look at the Mefarshim, the Nosei Kelim, they'll tell you all the sources for all these things. But I'm reading straight out of the Rambam right now.
Yeah,
it's
from the
Bible. Oh, it doesn't make any sense. Shenemar. Even if a person only walked 4 amos in Eretz Yisrael, he's zocha l'chayelam abba for that. You don't have it just for walking in the land of Eretz Yisrael 4 amos. It's amazing, no? This is amazing. Yeah, I mean, listen, it can get better. You've got a house and you've got a place to live. You make sure you have all the decorations and a bigger building, and you know, probably want to have a Ferrari at least, maybe Rolls Royce. Yeah, so you guys do more misses, but you have a place. V'chena kavurba. If a person's buried in Eretz Yisrael, everybody knows there's a lot of people want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam writes, even if you're buried, it's an atonement. Being buried in Eretz Yisrael is an atonement. Wow. U'ke'ilu ha'makam shubo mizbeach kapar. It's as if the place is like the physical place of atonement. It's like a mizbeach kaparish. And Amar v'chibra ad maso amo, that the earth of Eretz Yisrael atones for his people. But Puranus Omer al Adama Tamesa Tamus, and the opposite is true when Klaishal Abrahmanals on sent into Galus. So it says that on tame ground you will die. Veino Dome, and by the way, says the Rambam, there's a big difference between a person that lives and dies in Eretz Yisrael to a person that, you know, dies and then his body is schlepped there, and you know that, and that's it. But nonetheless, despite all of that, they would bring even dead bodies to be buried in the land of Israel. Take a look at Yaakov and Yosef, right? They wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Everybody learns the Medrash. They didn't want to roll. Remember what I'm talking about? They didn't want to roll. So the Rambam says that's not Shat. That's not the Rambam Shat. The Rambam Shat is because Eretz Yisrael is a very special place, and there's a kapara from being buried there. And it had nothing to do with the fear of rolling and the rolling stones and none of that stuff. That's not how the Rambam works. La'olam yador adam be'eretz Yisrael. A person should always live in Israel. Afilu be'ir sheruba akum. Even if you want to live with a bunch of Arabs. Now he may be talking to people over the Avodah Zarah. Arabs are not over the Zarah. The word that's here is akum. So it may even mean amongst even people that are doing Avodah Zarah. For al yadur b'chutz aretz, and don't live outside of Eretz Yisrael. Afilu be'ir sheruba Yisrael, even if you're living in a Jewish community. That's crazy. Can you imagine a rabbi giving you that advice? Move to the land of Israel, live in an Arab village. Don't live in New York City near the yeshiva. I would never give somebody that advice. I would never give that. But that's what Rama says. Rama says it's better to live in Eretz Yisrael, even in a Gaisha community, than it is to live in Chutz Laretz in a Jewish community. Whoa. Should call Yotze in Chutz Laretz, Kilavit Avodah Zarah, because whoever... So you hear the Rama says Yotze. The language bothers me. Yotze means to go out. It doesn't say to live. He doesn't say to live. He says to go out to Chutz Laretz is like doing Avodah Zarah. It sounds like to abandon Eretz Yisrael is like Avodah Zarah. But the Rambam seems to be saying to live in Chutz Laretz is like Avodah Zarah. Shenemar, ki gershuni hayom, estapeach v'nachalas Hashem. I've been exiled today from being able to be in the inheritance, in the heritage of Hashem. Lomar chavodah l'zim achirim. As this after being told, go do Avodah Zarah. The furnace of Omer, and in the Tokacha and the Klalos, it says, "Well, Admas Yisrael leYavoyu." The curse is that you won't be able to come to the Jewish land. Kishem Shasu Letzeis Mearetz Chutz Laretz. Just like one is not allowed. This is how the Rambam finishes. We're done. Just like one is not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laretz. Kach Asher Letzeis Mi Bavel Sharetzos. You're not allowed to leave Bavel to go outside of Bavel. Shneimar Bavel Yosh Devou B'Shamayu. You're going to go to Bavel. Stay there. Stay there, which of course is where Satmar and Eturei Karta comes from. Is that you have to stay there until the Mashiach brings you back. But that's how the Rambam ends. So what? Let's talk about this verse again. What's going on over here? What's going on over here? So the Rambam took an opportunity when he's done talking about making a melech, making sure you have a melech, getting rid of a melech. Now we're going to talk about Binyan Beis Hamikdash. So first he gets involved in Eretz Yisrael. What's the gist of what he's trying to say? That Eretz Yisrael is a very special place. It's where the Jewish people are supposed to be. It's better to live there in a Goyish community than the Jewish community in Chutz Laretz. He says that. And he talks about how the Chachamim would kiss the ground. The Rambam, Mr. Intellectual Rambam, says that you should kiss the ground. You should roll in its dirt. That's what the Chachamim, the greatest, tell me the greatest, the biggest intellectuals, the philosophers of Judaism. There was a love. There was a love for the land of Israel. And to leave, to abandon Eretz Yisrael, is like doing Avodah Zarah. It's like abandoning Hashem. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. So we're not so in touch with this Rambam, yeah? And the Rambam was not a Tzioni because there was no Tzioni stuff going on. There was no Zionism in the times of the Rambam. Yeah? He died in the beginning of the 1200s. So this is a perspective that the Rambam snuck in over here to Mishneh Torah. That he says this is the perspective we have to have. That's where we're supposed to be. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. She shouldn't even be buried there. Don't you find that amazing?